The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Okay, well, here's a little bit of a book recommendation, but I will warn you in advance, it's going to really torque you off. You're going to get pretty upset, especially if you've been paying attention for the last year at all. And the name Anthony Fauci makes the skin on the back of your neck crawl. But listen to this. The love of power is natural. It is insatiable. It is whetted, not cloyed by possession. Power renders man wanton, insolent of others, and fond of themselves. Enter Anthony Fauci. That's at the beginning. That's near the beginning of Fauci and Bargain, which we've been talking about since it came out recently by my friend Steve Dace, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history. You're talking about Anthony Fauci. Then you go towards the end of the book, and it says this. Fauci isn't your friend. He's a fiend. Franklin was one of our beloved founding fathers, but Fauci is an unfounding deadbeat dad. Nearly every premise he has asserted from the beginning has either been a well-intentioned or purposeful undermining of truth, the Constitution, the rule of law, common decency, and individual liberty. A year under Fauci's thumb makes King George III's madness look like the JV team, and that's not even talking about the mental health cataclysm that awaits. His time as the worm-tongue-esque shadow-casting pall over our nation must come to an end. But for that freedom to return, our own fear that has become our idol has to go. Time to throw out that idol into the fire. Beautifully written, powerful commentary and investigative journalism, if you remember what that is, by Steve Dace and his other co-author. Steve, how are you, man? Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Always good to talk to you and your audience, brother.
So this is this was infuriating to read. It must have been somewhat infuriating to prepare and write. So what was it like? Because you've done such a great job on this on your show on The Blaze, really since it broke last February. But to actually sit down and have to put this much time in discovery in here and like 150 footnotes, I mean, it had to have been trying.
It was. It has more footnotes than pages, 187 pages, over 200 footnotes. And the challenge was, what was too much? You know, I think it's Dennis Prager says any book that's more than 200 pages probably isn't worth reading. I don't know if I need to go quite that far. Yeah. But when you're dealing with this much information, and it's information that's outside of a lot of people's expertise or skill set, it can become white noise. It cannot be accessible, and people feel as if they're not even qualified to consider the skepticism. So we needed to make it obtainable and accessible at the exact same time, and that was the challenge. And that's one of the reasons why, when you go throughout the book, there's a couple of themes that get repeated over and over again, because we think those are the most important things that we need to follow up on when this is over. And it's ending now. You can see that the grip on their narrative is sliding. There was a poll out yesterday. Americans are the least panicked by COVID as they ever have been. You saw the sellout crowd at the Texas Rangers game yesterday. Hospitalizations have plummeted to below 3% of all ER visits in America. So you have the vaccination effort that's ongoing. You can see that the fight now is really about compulsive masks and forced vaccination. The lockdown argument pretty much has been lost.
Yeah, and it's been remarkable to see it kind of wind down. Part of that, obviously, is the media narrative changed immediately upon Joe Biden's ascension in the White House, or we just call it the Biden White House because that's convenient. But from the get-go with Fauci himself, and you mentioned something, and you talk a lot in the Fauci and Bargain about critical thinking. It's one of the seven things that you did a beautiful job towards the end of the book of showing kind of this strange allegiance and fascination with all things Pope Fauci as being literally cult-like based on seven principles that you would apply to call something a cult or not. And then on the opposite side, as you wrap up the book going, okay, let's look at seven things that we can do to kind of turn this around. Critical thinking is a big deal. And, you know, when it first happened, we had 14 days and then 30 days. And I think the good nature of the American people was in full play then. It had a little bit of a 9/11 feeling to it. Let's all come together. But that ended pretty quick. And then all of a sudden, Pope Fauci comes on the scene in the middle of all that. What was your original thinking about Fauci?
You know, and it's sometimes this works against me, but sadly, it often turns out to be accurate. I grew up in a home, as you well know, where on a given day, I didn't know if my dad was taking me to Cedar Point, Disney World, or was going to try to beat the snot out of us. And so I just have an instant anathema, Steve, to anybody that you tell me is unassailable.
Yeah.
Okay. I just don't believe it. I just don't believe anybody is beyond reproach and that no one is worthy of any scrutiny or skepticism. So from the very first day, I'm like, all right, already I don't trust this. Now we're giving this much power to somebody that none of us voted for. I mean, think about this. Everybody in your audience, every single person, every family, every church, every house of worship, every school, every business have had their entire lives controlled or impacted by one man that zero people have ever voted for, mail or any other method. All right. That just goes, if you understand human nature through the orthodoxy of a biblical lens, no person should be given that kind of power, even if they're great at something. That's just begging for trouble, not to mention someone who has been anywhere from erratic to ineffective to duplicitous this entire time. And so from the very beginning, it just didn't pass the smell test. But, you know, you want to buy into some of the esprit de corps. You don't want to immediately be a nihilist. So you give it a little bit of time. But right away, as early as late March of last year, already the data was showing that we were on the wrong track. And one of the themes we bring up repeatedly in the book, you know, we keep being told, trust the experts. What fascinated me about this from the beginning is I really thought this would be like a proxy fight for global warming.
Yeah.
Okay. And the same sides would square off with each other. What really blew me away is the same nation that gave us Greta Thunberg became the world's control group against this.
Yeah, Sweden.
What blew me away is Oxford, the number one university in the world, its Center for Evidence-Based Medicine, called horse pucky on this from the very beginning. Here at home, people at Stanford, Harvard, Yale, Carnegie Mellon, these are universities that a lot of our audiences, including the host, could never get into, Steve. And right away, they were like, this is not science. The data doesn't justify this. We don't quarantine healthy people. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
And yet they were all ignored. There were plenty of places that also believe in 57 genders and life begins when you decide you want it to be born that also thought this was bad. And yet they were all ignored. Why?
Yeah, why? That's the big question. Will we ever get an answer? Will we ever get a 9/11 commission, a big part of the Faucian bargain? A great subtitle, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history. Without a doubt, hands down, certainly true of Pope Fauci. We're talking to Steve Dace from The Blaze. He's live 12 to 2 Eastern time every day on The Blaze. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here today with Steve Dace from The Blaze. He's on live 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern time right after the Glenn Beck Show that we're talking about his brand new book. Amazon, number one bestseller, if you can find it. It's been an interesting game on Amazon. And actually, I was shocked, Steve, when you texted me and you're like, it's number one. And I was, oh, okay. How is that even possible?
Yeah.
It was really amazing. I'm just going to read this little part right back towards the end of the book. We used to encourage critical thinking. We now breed sheeple. Fauci exists in the minds of many such sheeple as the indispensable non-gendered specific being in a year of madness because he was primarily believed to be a calming and reasonable voice. Man, he had that down. Thus, he became the idol to be worshipped, particularly as he stood next to Donald Trump, the idol to be hated. And we're working our way through the Faucian bargain. You got to go get it yourself. Steve was kind enough to send me a PDF copy of it, so I was able to read through it and highlight the tar out of it. But it's available on Amazon, number one bestseller on Amazon, which is incredible. Which gives me great hope, Steve, that there's a growing number of people that have become more critical in their thinking than they were a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, we hit number one even before we got on Tucker Carlson's show, and then he put us back there. And I mean, we have received hundreds of emails. The book only came out last week. So many people have bought 5 copies, 10 copies to send them out to their pastors, church friends, schools, business people, family members that are caught in this panic. Almost like, where the term fundamentalist came from. We had the business leaders sending out the leaflets of the fundamentals, right, to kind of recover the lost traditions of the church here in America. This is kind of our 95 theses. And thankfully, we've got something called the internet and platforms where we can get this directly to you the same way that Luther could with Gutenberg's printing press. Now they're trying to jack with us in the search engine, which National Review wrote about today. But what fascinated me, Steve, is yesterday morning I spent an hour on C-SPAN.
Yeah, that was great. That was highly entertaining.
And it was like Karen's, you know, there's an old saying down where you live in the South, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yelps is the one you hit, right? Okay.
Yep.
And it was almost like Karen Stan knew that I was talking about them. And so they had to show up in mass. The amount of people, you know, it's what Loki says in the first Avengers film, you were made to be ruled. The amount of people who want to be ruled, who cannot wait to be subjugated, who cannot wait to be fed hand over fist, ham-fisted from one central authoritarian figure. The amount of people who were given a constitution and a declaration unique in human history and now say, we want a king so we can be like everybody else, if you get the analogy I'm drawing.
Yeah, that's all right? Of course.
Yes, I mean, the amount of people just dying for serfdom that I heard call into C-SPAN yesterday just goes to show you this is the fruit, you know, of a former president's pastor once warned about chickens coming home to roost. Well, we've now had it.
Yeah,
this is it.
That's right.
This is the bitter harvest of a generation of indoctrination. You're watching it play out right now.
Yeah, that's been an amazing thing. Probably maybe as recently as 3 or 4 or 5 years ago in contemplating the rise of the Antichrist and a one world government, whatever you want to do with end times theology and eschatology. Back then, not that long ago, Steve, I'd be like, yeah, you know, I don't see Obama in 2008 goes to Germany and draws a crowd of 200,000 people. He's a savior. He's not even the president yet. Maybe this will not be as difficult as I think. And then you get to the last year and to watch the American populace who has come out of the soil of independence and liberty just bow down. I mean, literally falling all over each other. And then to watch the church inside of itself divide over masks and the gaslighting and the virtue signaling. It was really surreal most of the year just to watch it happen.
Here's how you know the mask is an idol and a talisman. It would be very the division should be, hey, I don't want to be inconvenienced. They're a hassle. I don't care if I'm saving lives. Instead, what has happened is the more the data has shown that masks don't work, the masks don't work. Let me repeat, masks don't work. Let me repeat it. Masks don't work. Let me repeat one more time. Masks don't work. There is no data anywhere on God's creation in planet Earth that masks work. Masks don't work. And yet the more it became obvious they do not work, the more divisive it became. It wasn't like, wow, you mean I can take this thing off? It's a real nuisance. It was like, how dare you take it off?
Yep.
How dare you be different than everybody else? It was literally like, how dare you say you're not going to have this guy named Paul shows up, starts building tents, and you're not going to buy any more of my idols from the Temple of Artemis? How dare you not do that here in Ephesus? How dare you not do such a thing? You mean you're not going to practice circumcision anymore in Galatia? How dare you not do this? That's what it has been like. And the fact that many of our churches bought into this sets the stage for what you're watching happening.
Yeah.
If the world isn't going to know these things on its own, how will they hear the word if there is no one to teach it to them? So if we're not going to be any different than them, the world's not going to be any different than it was.
Were you surprised by most of the church in America capitulating, playing along, shrinking back? And I'm not even talking about their use of their constitutional rights. I'm just talking about as Christians in general.
No, I was surprised that the remnant was not quicker to defy. That surprised me.
Yeah.
Was I surprised that the multitudes were willing to assume the position for Caesar and couldn't wait to say Kaiser Curious? No, I was not surprised. I was surprised how few of the Polycarps we have that are saying I'm not doing that. I'm not bowing the knee to that. And it's still here. We're sitting here in post-Easter, and it's big news when a Polish immigrant pastor in Canada does it. It's big news here in the United States. That, to me, is problematic. Where are the 7,000 men in Israel who haven't taken the knee to Baal yet? Where is your remnant? Where are those 56 signers of the Declaration? Where are those 110 people holed up in the upper room post-crucifixion? Well, I mean, where's that remnant at? That, to me, is what, you know, Samuel Adams' great observation that history is always changed by this small committed minority.
That's right.
Who are, where was Gideon's 300 at? That to me is far more disconcerting.
Yeah, exactly right. We're talking to Steve Dace, Fauci and Bargan, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history, by Steve Dace and his co-author Todd Erzin. So what do you think? We talked a little bit during the break. For those of you on radio, on Facebook Live and YouTube Live, we take advantage of the radio breaks and have a sidebar conversation. And Steve's going to share a little bit of his testimony when we hit these next two breaks. But in looking at Fauci, we were talking, okay, this is a guy that I don't care what person it is, unless it's Jesus Christ himself. He's got flesh. He's got sin. He's got a predisposed nature to bend to power and control. And so Fauci, but then he starts to change his story. He did it on Mass. And then how do you explain in the flesh? We understand the spiritual, but in the flesh, what do you think was going on with Fauci the whole time? Because he just walked into it, took over, nobody stopped him, but he was willing to just change things openly.
If you look at our book, we follow his train of thoughts, or trail of tears, if you will.
Yeah.
And in January and February and into early March, he had a far more modest assessment of this situation, which a year later has turned out to be prescient. Anthony Fauci's not dumb. He's not bad at this. All of his original observations, masks don't work. You're probably looking at a fatality ratio around a pandemic level of a flu. Everything that he originally said has all turned out to be true. But then a switch was flipped when he went to Congress on March 11th. He totally did an about face, basically said this is Captain Trips. He went full Denethor, run for your lives, Ministereth is on fire. All right, this is it. And that sent the country into a year-long lockdown. Why? We need to know what changed on March 11th that he gave such a more dire assessment.
That's right.
What turned out to be true.
And when we get a 9/11 style commission to investigate all this, I don't know that that's possible under a Biden administration, but that's why we're talking about it, so that we can be informed and we can apply pressure wherever we can. Talking to Steve Dace, Fauci and Bargan, number one on Amazon. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Of all the albums, because, well, I'm old enough. I don't know if Steve Dace is old enough. Of all the albums in Steve Dace's album collection, I'm wondering if the Bee Gees ever get near the top of the list.
Oh, no. 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 No, I love that era of music, but I'd have been more AC/DC, Journey, Foreigner.
Yes. Yes.
Then
a child of the 80s,
though. Wimpy stuff.
Yeah. You're a little younger than me, so we'll extend some grace. We're talking to Steve Dace today, the author of Fauci and Bargan, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history. Of course, we're talking about Anthony Fauci, Pope Fauci, whatever you want to call him. And tell us a little bit about your co-author, Todd Erzin.
Todd is a great guy. Used to be the religion reporter at the Des Moines Register. And when he actually started reporting on it earnestly here in our community, as opposed to gaslighting it and trolling it, they ended up getting rid of him. And
wow.
I figured I needed somebody who knew me well enough that they would call, BS on me, frankly, if I got out of line. All right. But somebody at the same time that wouldn't necessarily compete with me on my own show,
but
be confident enough to have their own opinion, even if it was different than mine, basically an accountability partner. So I hired him to essentially remind me that my waste products don't stink. And he did a fantastic job helping to go through. What he did really is take a year's worth of material that we had done on our show here, Steve, compile it and catalog it into the categories we were looking to highlight. So, I mean, I could help compile the narrative of all of our work really in only a couple of weeks. I mean, we kind of modeled this after the Eagles' greatest hits. All right. And so you could buy four or five different albums to get Already Gone or Desperado or Tequila Sunrise. We thought, let's just put them all on one album instead.
Yeah, there you go. And that's exactly what happened. Fauci and Bargan, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history, available at Amazon, number one on Amazon. And it's a great read. It's an easy read. And one of the things that I would challenge all of you, if you've just kind of bought the mainstream narrative, if you just kind of look at the headlines, if you just look at the clickbait, but you've never really taken the time to dive into some of this, don't let it intimidate you. Yes, there's a lot of facts and figures and some research in that. But the way Steve talks is the way that he writes. And so it's very easy to read through this. And plus, there's that always the entertaining. I'm pretty good at catching all your references to movies and music, Steve. So that always would come at the right time and lighten it up, which I always enjoyed, even down to the Han Solo reference towards the end of the book, which was, of course, touching to my heart. All right. So you were mentioning Fauci. I think it was March 20th when he went before Congress. All of a sudden, he flips
March
the 11th. Switch.
March 11th.
So, yeah. So what do you think was going on there politically? And let's talk a little bit about Fauci and Trump's relationship.
Well, I've been asked, a lot of people that I've interviewed with for the book here in the last week have asked me, so what do you think happened those 11 days? And I've in my time as a talk show host, I've done my absolute best and absolute worst psychoanalyzing people's motivations. It's when I'm the most right and the most wrong, and I hate being wrong. So I'm really trying not to do it very often anymore. But if you put a gun to my head or the Wonder Woman lasso of truth on me, what I think occurred here is during that time period there, heading into mid-March, Fauci came to the realization that his former cronies and compadres and simpaticos at the World Health Organization and over at the Wuhan Institute were not trustworthy, that China was lying to us, could not be trusted. But now he is in a corner because he has a way too cozy relationship with them. He had funneled taxpayer money to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He had actually gone against the Obama administration had stopped him from doing gain of function research because of the dangers of it back in the latter part of the Obama era.
And gain of function research, for people to understand, because that phrase has actually been around. It's showing up a lot in the last year. But explain that right quick, because this is really important.
Essentially, gain of function research is enacting a contagion in order to study it, basically detonating a nuclear weapon in order to see what fallout does to human beings. That's essentially what we're talking about. OK, except they weren't doing this at Bikini Island, brother. They were doing this in a lab in one of the most populated areas in China. And so I think that he was closely aligned with them. The Obama administration had stopped him doing this research. His institution had restarted it after Obama left. When a new president came over, I'm guessing, probably thinking that with the transition, this was so far down the bureaucratic rabbit hole, it would go unnoticed. And so they went down this road again. And I think that is why he realized he was trapped, that we have a virus that at the very least was being experimented on in a lab, if not originated, altered, what have you. And maybe therefore it operates outside of what we know of the natural laws of virology, immunology, and biology. If he comes forward and he says this, as the former CDC director Robert Redfield actually said this last week, but if he says this, then it will dredge up all of his old connections with that institute,
right,
with China, with the WHO. And so he's trying to balance these beach balls that are competing with each other. And then all of a sudden the media comes in, the ego kicks in, and you start believing your own narrative enough that you almost sociopathically can just repeat it like a mantra over and over again. That would be my guess of what happened here.
Yeah, you go right back to that. Use a movie reference. Go right back to that great scene in Scarface when he's given some advice to Tony Montana. It's don't get high on your own supply.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly what Fauci did. But what about Trump? Because you and I were talking off the air during the break that Trump, early on, I was like, why doesn't he get a set of opinions that disagree with Birx and Fauci and all these folks and get them into a room and let it be a cage match and try to actually come to some kind of an agreement that's just not one-sided, because I didn't trust any of them from the start as well. So talk about Trump versus Fauci.
Well, here's the thing. The worm on this turned almost instantly. The UK was actually going to do a Sweden approach. And then the Imperial College model came out. Boris Johnson panicked. And now he's been one of the worst lockdown leaders in the world since. And so this model comes out and says 2 million people are going to die unless you do all these things. And you have to act right now because this thing is going to spread right now. And so I think everybody, Trump, all of them, Merkel, all panicked. And then there's a thing in politics, you know, where you cost shift the blame around, where if you all make the same mistake, none of you can be held accountable because there's no alternative to vote in or elect in because they're all guilty of the same weakness. And so there's you know, mutual culpability here. So I think that was all plotted out as well. I actually don't fault anybody for that, given the gravity of the moment.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
weren't sure.
I agree.
It's what happened after those 15 days that I think Trump, with his connections to New York and Fauci's stature in New York, I'm sure they had known each other for a long, long time. Birx comes in. You know, she just became a member, I think, of the George Bush Presidential Library. So she's well attached to the traditional Republican machine. She comes in highly recommended by your vice president, Mike Pence. And so, you know, and then you have a guy that comes from corporate America and, you know, Google and Microsoft and all, and Bill Gates and all these people come forward and said, yeah, we'll help you. You know, the private sector will come to your aid. That's speaking Donald Trump's love language.
Yeah.
And I think all those things kind of just conspired to get this momentum going. And then by the time it was obvious they were on the wrong path, I think, you know, I think both you and I believe Donald Trump turned out to be, thankfully, a better president than we assumed he was going to be going in. Is that fair?
Hands down.
Okay.
Hands down.
Hands down. But no matter how high your view is of Donald Trump, you have to admit, admitting defeat, error, showing some form of remorse, not one of his strengths. So it was, I think, very difficult. I mean, look at the announcement they made last year. They do this fantastic press conference at the White House where they announce how you can reopen. And then they spend the next 2 days, Trump does, criticizing the governor of Georgia for reopening too fast.
Yep.
Okay. I mean, I think that he wanted both sides of the issue. I saved your life by locking down, but lockdowns are bad and we can't ever do them again. That's really hard to message up against. We have to do this or people will die. Right. And I think that's where they got confused. That the White House felt trapped from people I talked to, like they couldn't get rid of Fauci, but they knew that he was killing him at the exact same time. And it really wasn't until the president, I think a lot of us thought when he got COVID, oh, boy, this election's over.
Yeah.
That's actually when he recovered and he faced it head on and saw what treatments and advancements we had made and what was available to confront this, that he actually got on the messaging that he needed to be on probably a few months prior to that. They hired Scott Atlas too late, should have hired him in June or July about reopening the schools. They waited until well into August. And so they just kept getting behind the curve, Steve. They could never get ahead of the story.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. It just the snowball got way too big, and then it was over at that point. So what about moving forward?
And then
forward?
One last thing I should add to that,
yeah,
if you don't
go
mind.
Ahead. No, go ahead.
It set into stage the mail-in voting. That was his ultimate
demise.
Oh,
man. Ultimate.
Whether you think the thing was hijacked or stolen or they were just able to reach parts of their base that they never could before, whatever your rationale is for the abnormal turnout numbers that we saw and the abnormal inequalities we saw in those turnout numbers, there's a reason we fought mail-in voting on our side for 25, 30 years for these sorts of things to never happen. And this gave them the crisis that they needed to justify it. So it impacted the outcome of the election, even beyond your opinion of his guidance during this issue. It handed the Democrats the very mechanism they have been dying to have for 25, 30 years.
Yeah, and that's where you ultimately take Trump out of the picture, even take Fauci out of the picture. And as soon as this thing got its head above water, the progressives, the liberals, Democrats, the reset, the great reset folks, all of a sudden, this was the golden ticket to Willy Wonka's factory or the golden slipper, whatever you want to call it, to unlock the path to their worldview.
It's almost like, if depending on what your eschatological views are, it's like the enemy is waiting for a rapture to occur because that's when he knows that's his moment to seize, right?
Right,
okay?
Right.
The church is gone. It was almost like the globalists, the spirit of the age leftists, they were ready, prepared for this kind of moment to pounce on it. Very, very much like that.
Yeah, exactly right. We're talking to Steve Dace, Fauci and Bargan, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history, talking about Anthony Fauci. We're going to change gears when we come back right after this. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, the Fauci and Bargan, the most powerful and dangerous bureaucrat in American history, available at Amazon. Just ripping it up over there, which is great. That should give you some pause in terms of what you think about the country. We still have way too many people that are not critical thinkers, that are just willing to be led astray. But that's nothing new, and that's been talked about and written about for a few thousand years. We've known this was coming, and whether it's in the next 10 years, 100 years, that's not for us to know. But I would encourage you to be a critical thinker, to spend the time. Do not be lulled by the way this world operates. Don't just be a consumer of clickbait and the headline. Make sure you're aware of your own biases and that you're going to ignore things that maybe challenge you. Don't do that. I think the one thing that we need to be as Christians, especially in this world today, is people of wisdom and discernment in a different way. Don't just fall into the trap of the left or the right. We should be peculiar in the way that we approach these things. And we call balls and strikes based on the word of God. It should not matter who's standing at the plate. So if you only pulled out the microscope when it comes to Barack Obama, but you only pull out a pedestal when it comes to Donald Trump, that's unequal weights and measures. That's not a good witness for a Christian. We need to be brutal when it comes to the truth, and that's exactly what you'll experience when you read Fauci and Bargan by Steve Dace and Todd Erzin. Now, let me switch gears here. Where do you want to go? We could talk about the border crisis. We could talk about what's going on in Georgia, you with the sports talk background that you have, and the MLB down there. We could talk about H.R. 1 or H.R. 5. Where do you want to go? We got 10 minutes, so let's burn it up. We'll get as much as we can.
Let's talk about the border and the Georgia thing.
Okay.
Let's talk about both of those.
All right.
And when you look at what's going on down at the border, and you know, we have been told this and gaslighted with this from both major parties, establishments. The Democrats have been looking for a new potential class of victims to manipulate. Republicans and their donor class looking for more indentured servant human chattel, cheap labor to exploit. And so there's this notion that we have just kind of looked the other way, watching as people desperate to get out of second or third world nations in Central and South America come across our border in order for a better life. And we look the other way because there's at least some form of economic benefit to this for us. And I think what you're learning now is that this attack, that the only reason you want border security is you're a xenophobe. The only reason you want border security is you're a racist. Is now that we have a president that has essentially said, come hither. The gates are open. You're welcome. No one gets deported. What we're seeing now is all these years we didn't protect our southern border, Steve. There's a variable down there, and it's called drug mules, human traffickers, drug cartels. One of my best friends is Congressman Chip Roy of Texas. He's gone down to the border twice in the last month. Both times he's gone down there, he has videotaped migrants trying to escape human traffickers in real time. Like, he's watching it happen, human trafficking with his own eyes while this is going on. What's going on down there now beyond just even transcends the immigration debate we've been having for the last couple of decades. This is a human tragedy.
That's
It's a crime against humanity. And these are mostly brown kids that this is being done to. And when they make it across the border safely, they put them in essentially aluminum foil. I mean, like pigs in a blanket. You would think with this going on, particularly to non-white children, that this would be the perfect event for our media to exploit.
Yeah,
and yet
funny.
They can't memory hole it fast enough, which tells you they don't care about these immigrants. They don't care about these migrants. They don't care about these kids. They care only about their agenda. And yet again, just like has been the case with the spirit of the age since the dawn of the welfare state, the very disadvantaged groups that they claim to help the most always end up hurting the most in the end.
That's right. Ultimately, they don't really care about anybody but themselves. They care about power. And whether it's little brown kids being thrown over the border wall or kids being, or 35% of all abortions being African Americans being ripped to shreds by white doctors paid for by black moms and dads. I mean, it's literally, I don't throw the word evil around that easily, but that's exactly
what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to change. And like you said, the Biden administration throws the doors open. We're the ones, the Biden administration is the one baiting the trap. They're the ones that put the cheese out and then everybody comes out. And then when the necks of these people are getting squashed, we look at the Republicans or the Border Guard or look at ICE and say that's their fault. No, it isn't. It's whoever's putting the bait on the trap, and that would be the Biden administration.
I think their plan was to Cloward and Tippin this thing. I mean, if you know the reference I'm making, there's two Columbia professors where Barack Obama went to school, and they were hard leftists, and they correctly divided that Americans will never hand over freedom and liberty because it's just too prosperous. And so they'll only accept authoritarian statism if we create a series of crises that overrun the various infrastructure systems so that the only answer is an authoritarian government solve the problem. Right. And the problem, I think they meant to do that here at the border. And that was the hope. Hey, this is why we need an open border. It's unenforceable. See, but the problem is the drug cartels and the human traffickers came out in full force and on camera to show what's truly going on in the border. That for every family that is just trying to escape Honduras for a job, some migrant job somewhere in the United States, there's at least one drug mule or human trafficker down there waiting to kidnap their daughter, to sell her into porn, waiting to turn their son into a drug mule. And now that this is all out in the open, they now are running from this story as fast as they can because this exploitation has blown up in their faces.
Yeah, and let's make sure we're all praying about that, whether you agree with the Biden administration or any of these people. We are called to be people of prayer, especially for those in authority over us and what's going on down on the southern border. Should grab your gospel heart firmly and should keep you invested in that. So let's make sure we're doing that. All right, so Georgia, Charlie Kirk tweeted this earlier today. Let me get this straight. The MLB moved the All-Star game from a city with a 51% black population to a city with a 9.1% black population, and removed a $100 million economic investment in largely black-owned businesses, all in the name of fighting systemic racism? A great point down there in Georgia with the voting law. How do you read that one?
I love Atlanta. Been there several times. Marietta is one of my favorite suburbs in America. If it weren't for the fact they have Byzantine levels of traffic in Atlanta, I could have seen myself living there, several years ago. But and one of the things you'll love about it, too, if you're there, is the amount of diversity that's there.
Yeah.
There's a strong, robust black middle class there, black business owner class there. And they're the ones, ironically, Stacey Abrams, this is her most successful race bait yet. It worked too well. It blew up in her face. And all those businesses and that black middle class is going to suffer greatly now because of this decision. And what it means, though, for audiences with a biblical worldview is you need to understand that the model of the 80s and 90s, where these corporations funded our causes that they maybe didn't agree with, but they hoped by voting for our candidates, we keep the Democrats away from taxing and regulating them out of business. That arrangement is gone.
That's
it dead. Doesn't exist anymore.
That's right.
These corporations aren't even just doing this because they're afraid of being shook down. They're true believers in many of these boardrooms. They are the funders, all right, of this. They're the Miss Havishams, if you get the literary reference here, of wokeism. They're the ones subsidizing this. They're against us now. And I think we're going to have to make a choice here. It's bad economic policy to punitively tax and regulate those who are most likely to provide jobs, but it's cultural death to let unelected corporate oligarchs ruin your way of life that you aren't accountable to you at the ballot box. And I think we need to start getting our red state governors to say, you know what? If you want California, stay there. Put all your events there.
That's right.
Go there with all their high taxes and all their high regs. We'll come up with something new to replace you. All right. But we're not, you don't get to come here and enjoy the freedoms of the Texases of the world.
Right. Exactly.
And in order to then export here this rot gut, we're not accepting that Faustian bargain any longer. And I think that is something where we're going to have to change the way we have thought about these sorts of issues in past eras.
Well, we're so used to being on our heels as opposed to being the aggressor. And when you look at this, I'm like, let's get federalism trending again. Let's get state governments that look the federal government in the face and say, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to do what we want. And we're
independent. That's what Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida.
Exactly.
Right now.
That's exactly what he's doing.
It's almost like he's practicing like a militant form of federalism where he's not just saying we're going to be uniquely Florida, but he's taking it to another level saying, I'm going to protect my people from Florida from the federal government itself. He's like taking it to another level now.
That's exactly right. So as we finish up, Steve, this is a largely born again conservative Christian audience. What's your encouragement, your words of challenge to us as we move into this new era with Biden and everything going on in our country?
That there is, the harvest is plenty, but the workers are few,
brother.
The fact, you know, we have a successful show on a massive platform, but we're one of the more modest shows on that platform. The fact that it's hard to get the number one book in America. Amazon is where 83% of all books are sold. There's 48.7 million books for sale on Amazon right now.
Man.
And we have spent most of the last week number one out of all of those books. That shows you there's more people like you than you think there are.
Amen.
There's more people. It's not a majority, but it's not nothing either. And so my hope is when they read this book, this is not something you read and you're like, I knew I was right. Cool story, bro. You take this to your boards of health. You take this to your legislators, your mayors. You take it to your county supervisors, to your pastors and say, enough of this. Show me the data because I have the data that shows you're wrong. Just go to your pastors. Why are any of our churches anywhere in America closed? Enough is enough. We wrote the ultimate concordance here, if you will, to help you get your lives back. But like Luther's 95 Theses, it's a galvanizer. You've got to do something with it now.
That's right. Shrink your America and play the game locally. That's what we all need to do. And subscribe to The Blaze, by the way. I've subscribed to The Blaze so that I can get to Steve Dace and help support that platform. I do the same thing with Daily Wire. We all need to support alternative conservative media because it is one way that we can fight back against the juggernaut. And obviously, Steve's very gifted, and the Lord's done and continues to do a lot with him. Steve, God bless you, brother. Always great to have you on. Thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are, and we'll do it again.
You bet, brother. Same to you.
All right, pal. We'll talk to you. Okay, there you go, guys. Make sure you share this show today. Make sure you go get the Fauci and Bargain by Steve Dace and Todd Erzin. Get these things. Use them. Knowledge is power, but with knowledge comes responsibility, okay? Don't just sit on the sidelines. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.